Welcome back to season 8 of Talking with Traders. This is the fourth year of this podcast since it began in 2020. Once again, IG Markets have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful and privileged to have such a global leader in CFD trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the podcast, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Once again, thank you to IG Markets for sponsoring this podcast into its fourth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. Now let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders, and I'm delighted to bring a new guest to the podcast this week. He's a Forex trader. His name is Ian Coleman from FX Street Premium. He's an analyst there and a Forex trader. And we haven't had many Forex traders on this podcast, funnily enough. And this is actually episode number 101 of the podcast, but we haven't actually really had a dedicated Forex person on the podcast yet. And I guess maybe that's because most of my network is in the equities and equity derivative space, but it's going to be good to speak to you, Ian. Welcome to Talking with Traders.
Thanks, Garth. Nice to be here. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, and you likewise. Thanks. Yeah, so we met at the London Trader Show last week, the week before last, and had a chat about what you guys were doing there at FX Street, and decided it'd be a good idea to get you on the podcast and talk a little bit about, you know, yourself, your experience in the markets, and also just to touch a little bit on what FX Street does. But as I always do with new guests on this podcast, I like to just get a little bit of background to your story. I can clearly see you've got some gray hairs, but like me, getting some gray hairs. So you've got some scars. I'm sure you've been around the block a bit. Tell us about your career in the market and, you know, the path that you've taken to get to where you are now.
Okay. I'm going to let you guys do the maths, but I started in foreign exchange markets, if you like, when I was 18 years of age. I'm now 54. So, if you cut me in half, it would probably say FX somewhere, like a stick of Brighton Rock. But did I gain sort of experience for trading back in the day? No, probably not. I was an FX broker. So we were the guys basically back in the day that used to put trades together between banks. I worked on a desk at a company called Godsell Ashley & Pierce. It was based on Cannon Street in London. And we used to broke dollar Swiss, so forward dollar Swiss. So not the spot market, not what most retail traders trade. We were putting trades together through the likes of sort of UBS, NatWest, Citibank, mainly the big sort of players, global players in foreign exchange at the time. And we were middlemen. So somebody would want to do a 6-month swap. We would try and get them the best rate. They'd check names to see if they could do each other, believe it or not, because some banks couldn't lend to each other or receive. And then the deal will be done and we'll get paid brokerage for it. So that sort of was my, I'm going to say a baptism of fire, because it definitely was. I'd come from a very short banking background. I worked at Midland Bank, which is now HSBC, doing the Prudential book up in Holborn. And I got, I used to go out drinking with these brokers because one of my pals worked there, and it was a case of who you knew, not what you knew back in the day. Now you need sort of degrees and stuff like that, but I was lucky enough to get offered a position and went through the ranks pretty quickly. So started off at Godsell Ashley & Pierce, moved to another company called Babcock Fulton Prebon, that then became Prebon Yamani. Always broke in dollar Swiss. Then I went to broke dollar yen. Then I went back to dollar Swiss, went to a company called RP Martins. and set up my own desk there. Broke in dollar Swiss. I was quite young at the time, and yeah, gained a lot of experience about the functionality of foreign exchange, if you like. But were we deciphering charts and were we sort of trying to work order flow and stuff like that? No, we weren't. We were, two phones, and you ground out the trade. So I left the markets at 36 voluntarily, I'd like to say, because a lot of people were a lot of desks were closing down at the time. The competition was fierce. A lot of the brokers were in competition with each other. Well, all the brokers were in competition with each other, and they were offering discount rates to banks to try and gain their business. And then one broker would undercut another broker, and our pool where we got paid from was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And they bought in a wage system called PRP, which is profit related pay, and it was everything to sort of cut down the middlemen, basically. And EBS came in, which was the electronic banking system. So, as with AI now, I suppose, these sort of computers and computer programs started to take our jobs. So I decided it was time to get out. I actually came back to Sheffield, where I grew up as a kid. I married a young lady at the time from Sheffield, and we set up a delicatessen coffee shop. That was more hard work than broking. I was going in the other direction, but I wasn't. 7 days a week, even earlier mornings. I got offered the opportunity from a company that white labeled a spread betting platform while I still had the deli. So I sold that and went to work for them, basically producing analysis for them. That was about, God, how many years ago now? Must be 20 years. So I was only out of the market a small period of time, if you like, and then jump back in, and really did jump back in with a lot of force, and committed myself to sort of really understand what bank traders were doing, and what technical analysis was all about, really. I then went on to write quite a lot of reports for FX Street at the time. Got headhunted by a company called PIA, which was Price Information Advantage, it was called, which predominantly dealt with banks and gave analysis to banks. Wrote analysis for that company. And then myself and a colleague, Steve O'Hare, we ended up buying the business, if you like, turned it into a retail offering instead of being an institutional offering. So sold it into the likes of platforms like IG Index, Saxo Bank, etc. And then left that company, but still worked for that company, believe it or not. Bit of a weird story there. A few years ago, and have started working for FX Street. So myself and four other colleagues run the premium service around there. So it's a Discord channel, writing, analysis, deciphering the news. We've got live coverage tonight, obviously, with the Fed. So we've got a live coverage channel, and trade plans. So it's educational, it's informative, and hopefully profitable. So
All right,
that's my
interesting.
journey.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, so Forex, I mean, I've always had it in my mind that, and I've not done a lot of Forex trading, because I've got more of an equities background. But it, being a trader, I suppose we all dabble in different things here and there. And of course, Forex is an enormous market. But I've always sort of had it in my mind that trading Forex is harder than trading equities or equity indices because you're looking for a much smaller percentage move, usually, which means you have to take far bigger positions to really move the needle when trading Forex. Now, I don't know. I mean, do you agree with that line of thinking, or have I got it wrong? Now, they're obviously very different products, but at the end of the day, as well, like you say, you look at technical analysis, a chart's a chart. The patterns are similar; they're repeatable in different markets.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I on the mark there, or is that not fair to say
I
that
think
the
there's pros and cons for both. I think there's more advantages for trading foreign exchange than disadvantages. So you've got high liquidity. You've got 24-hour coverage. You've got I think the beauty of foreign exchange is getting away from indices, but single stocks I just find too difficult to analyze,
Okay.
to be perfectly honest. When I
Right.
first got out of the markets, I delved into the single stocks, and working out a company's background, and share price, and it was too complicated for me, to be honest.
Okay.
And I needed something that was far more systematic, and hence chart analysis, and hence why I went and got a diploma from the Society of Technical Analysts, because I'm obsessed with charts, basically.
Right.
And what I like about foreign exchange is that you've got, or I've got, 47 different products to look at. If you, I think with retail traders, especially if you're sort of talking to somebody that's just started on their journey, and you say, what products do you like to trade? And I know this from the Discord channel, because there's one product that we get asked probably 30 times a day, and all retail's just obsessed with gold. So it's, what's the price on gold? What's the price on gold? It moves a dollar, and we're getting asked what will happen tonight with gold, with the Fed meeting, blah, blah. And it's, and I think it's some people that start on the journey just sit around and say, right, I'm going to just concentrate on one major. I'm just going to look at euro against the US dollar, or I quite like the way that sterling dollar moves, so I'm going to concentrate on that. But they miss so many opportunities in other products. I scan the markets, not continuously, but I always know when I'm getting a setup, and I look at single currencies to forecast weakness against strength. So I'm always looking for one weak currency against one strong currency. Now, sometimes I'll be lucky enough that I will get risk currencies that all line up saying, you should be buying risk. And then I can look at stock indices because I want to be buying risk. But I'm always looking at correlation. So everything, I believe that the market's just one big matrix, and you need to be looking at, do you want to sell sterling? Which products are telling you to sell sterling? Is euro sterling looking to go higher? Does sterling Swiss looks bearish? Does sterling yen look bearish? Then you've got the correlation for sterling. I think when you're just looking at purely a single product or stock indices, I personally struggle to get that correlation. The chart formations still work, and my system will occasionally work, but I don't feel that they're as strong, if you put it that way, because I haven't got that. I'm always looking for an overlay. I'm careful of analysis paralysis, as they say, where you've got millions of indicators on a chart and you can't pull the trigger because it's just too confusing. And because of that, I sort of I just focus on FX.
All right, that's really interesting. So 47 products, obviously 47 currency pairs, but you did mention gold. So I mean, are there a couple of things outside of just foreign forex pairs there, something like gold? Do you look at other commodities at all amongst that?
Gold, US crude. I look at Brent. I analyze them all. I don't trade them personally. And then obviously, all the US indices, the DAX, FTSE, etc. But
And your style of trading, are you a day trader or are you more of a swing trader? I mean, what's the sort of average
no,
holding time frame for a trade in your world?
definitely swing.
Swing.
I mean, I do believe that, not there's no one size fits all. If you can scout the markets, and be, an aggressive day trader that does 40 trades a day, etc. when I first sort of started off on my journey, I tried this. It didn't work for me. And I do believe that sort of over time you do develop your own approach to the market. I've got a pal called Lee who I used to work with, and he trades 15 minutes in the morning for the DAX open, and he trades 15 minutes in the afternoon for the S&P open.
Really?
And but he's still there, he's still analyzing the markets, but they're the sort of they're the there is two focus points is when the markets open. My setups, I think you've also got to have a system. Okay, news moves markets. We know that the Fed interest rate decision tonight will move the markets. The BOJ meeting on Tuesday morning, which completely hoodwinked me, to be honest, because I was convinced it was going to go in the other direction.
For the
You know
benefit
that.
of the listeners, we're recording this on the 20th of March, by the way. So it's the Fed meeting tonight on Wednesday, the 20th of March. And then obviously the Bank of Japan meeting you're referring to was yesterday morning, where they the Bank of Japan have now announced, much anticipated, that they're starting to raise interest rates, and they're dialing back this easy monetary policy that's been in place for what feels like forever. And yeah, I think a
And the
lot of
yen
people.
collapsed
A lot of
on
people.
the back of that.
Exactly. A lot of what I read, everybody said, well, now that interest rates are going to start to move up in Japan, money's going to flow out of the rest of the world back into Japan, and you're going to find the yen getting stronger. Or, well, as you say, it did completely the opposite of that. In fact, the yen moved quite sharply weaker yesterday after that. And what was the reason? Just by the way, I mean, was it because the
I
move in
think it's,
interest rates wasn't as big as what people thought it might be?
yeah, I think so. And maybe a bit of sort of buy the rumor, sell the fact scenario. I mean, I look, like I was saying before, I look at single currency baskets. I'd bought a pattern, a few weeks ago, which worked really well, and I had everything lined up for a continuation to the upside. So it completely wrong-footed me. I do take a lot of notice of data releases, speeches, etc. And yeah, it completely wrong-footed me. So I'm surprised the market's taking the yen so low. You've got wage inflation, which was a massive concern in Japan, and they actually said that if it got up to 5.5%, that they'd have to start the hiking cycle, and it's up around those levels. So yeah, I don't know. I wish I did, otherwise I wouldn't have been caught on the wrong side, that's for sure.
Markets always have a way of surprising us, don't they? Or doing the least obvious thing. But to that point, I mean, you're talking about risk, and when things do go wrong, how do you manage risk on a trade? And what like a lot of, and again, I'm going to go back to the retail derivative stock and derivatives trading market here, but there's the notion you risk 1% of your capital on a trade and all of that sort of thing. Now, in your world, how do you manage risk? How do you define position size and manage risks?
Well, I think the issue is, and the issue is with most retail traders, and myself included, is that if you risk 1% of your capital, you're never going to make enough money. I think the average retail trader, from my experience, has got something in the region of 2,500 to £3,000 in an account. You're going to be trading micro lots if you're risking 1%. If you're risking 1% and you're doing 40 trades a day, then that's understandable. But my setups are, you have to be patient. I might get one, two, three a week if I'm lucky. So again, if I'm risking 1% and I'm looking at a sort of 4-to-1 risk reward ratio, and I get them all right, that'd be great. Then I've got 12% on the week, but they won't all play out. So, I look, if I like the setup, I'm far more likely to risk in the region of sort of 4 or 5%. I always know my entry level. I always know my stop.
Yeah.
and I always know my target before I'm executing any trade. Sometimes I can get in the region of, 6 to 7 R, which is risk against reward,
Yeah.
on some of my setups. So if I get a bleeder like that, then it can make my week, my month,
Yeah, it, and
my
it
year.
takes care of a lot of losses as well. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. You refer to setups quite a bit, and I know before the podcast we said, you asked me could we share screen and all that. So because this is a podcast, we don't usually do that. But at the same time, we're noticing that a large part of our audience is actually consuming these podcasts through YouTube now. So we're going to try the share screen thing now and give you the opportunity to actually share a couple of setups because it is potentially more, easier to explain it visually. So, for the benefit of those who are watching this podcast on YouTube, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. If you're listening to the podcast on a podcast app, well, then obviously you're going to just have to listen extra carefully to try and imagine what we're saying, or maybe come back and watch the YouTube video afterwards. But Ian, let's you I've enabled you to share screen if you'd like to create a show us what a setup looks like in your world.
Well, I had an old boss that used to say that if you wrote a report, an FX report, like a trade signal or a trade plan, that the reader should be able to close their eyes and imagine what's going on.
Yeah.
So hopefully, we'll be able to do that when we show this. So there's two setups that I've looked at this morning. One is for Sterling, New Zealand,
Okay.
and one is for
I
sterling
can't
swiss.
see your
Yeah, I'm
screen,
just
just by the way.
going
Just
to
in
just
case I
yeah
didn't know, thought maybe you're on another screen and you know how it is. We all have multiple screens as traders. Sometimes
I think
you
that's
should
the
end up
right is
sharing the
that the
wrong
right
screen.
one
Yeah, I can see that. So what have we got there? New Zealand retail
that's
sales, UK retail sales.
yeah that's the
Right.
sterling New Zealand. So I'm actually going to drop it
Okay.
off to the sterling swiss. So the you're talking about sort of what products to a trade. So this right-hand side, it's basically all the products that I look at. So there's a fair bit to go at. Every time there's an amber dash, if you like, next to a product, it's something that I'm considering.
Okay.
When there's a red, it's something that I've sold. So sterling swiss should be red as well. And obviously, when it's blue, it's something that I've bought. So you can see on there, there's something like 65 products,
Right.
that with 45 being FX. So what I do look at is I used to be fanatical about Fibonacci levels, so
Okay.
Fib levels. Back in the day, I was a Elliott Wave enthusiast, should we say? But I found it too subjective. I always like breaking down time frames from higher to lower time frames. So looking at a weekly chart, daily, 8 hour, 4 hour. And you used to talk to different people about a single product and they'll say, oh yeah, we're in the fourth wave in a five wave count on the weekly chart. But then you'll see it correcting lower and then they would adjust the analysis to sort of curve fit, if you like, what was actually happening in the product. So
Okay.
I sort of fell out of love with Elliott Wave. I still use it to a certain extent, but only if it's inside these other patterns. So I then read a book, and I read a hell of a lot of books. I think education is key. I read a book called Trade What You See, and it's about cipher patterns, symmetrical patterns, which are also based around Fib levels, so fib extension levels, fib retracement levels. And I found that when you actually pinpointed the completion of these patterns, that they offered really good trade opportunities. So there's four major patterns. There's a crab, a butterfly, a Gartley, and I'm going to and a bat formation. Nearly forgot
Okay. Okay.
the last one. Two are inside patterns, two are outside patterns.
Right.
Obviously, if you want to get more in depth with the actual formations, then I suggest you read that book.
Okay.
And basically, what I've always also managed to do is I managed, and this is about 15 years ago, I actually paid a Russian developer to program a system for me that highlights areas of support and resistance. And that's, I wouldn't call it a USP because I'm not selling anything, but that's sort of my unique analytical tool that I use, and that's actually the dashed lines on the charts. And I look to those dashed lines for support and resistance, and for the completion of these cipher formations. So what I want to do, if I'm looking at a cross currency or any currency, I want to have a good thesis for one currency to go low and one currency to go higher. And that can be technical and fundamental, or it can just be technical. So, as we said earlier, news drives markets. So, if you're looking at a reversal of a decent trend, why is it going to reverse? Well, I've got a technical level. Yeah, but why? What's going to drive it? So you can actually see on the chart at the moment, I've got New Zealand retail sales. So that actually comes out today. So, from this topping formation or potential topping formation, there's a driver. There's New Zealand retail sales, which could drive the New Zealand dollar higher. We'll stick to this one actually instead of
So,
sterling, but
just so that we I know, so we're looking at the pound versus the New Zealand dollar, yeah?
yeah.
And what is the
So
time frame on this chart?
this chart is actually 6 hours.
6 hours. Okay. All right.
Only because it's easier to see. It's actually formulated on a 4 hour chart.
Right.
So the cipher pattern completes at 2:10:70. Okay. We've got New Zealand retail sales, like I said, that could be the catalyst for lower sterling, higher New Zealand. And then on the 22nd, which is obviously Friday, we've got UK retail sales. So again, that could be another driver for this currency cross. But I've mentioned single currencies a lot, so I'm going to show you the single currency baskets that I've developed. Now, I use TradingView charts, and basically every single currency basket that I've developed is a combination of crosses. So in other words, I look at eight different single currencies. So the sterling single currency basket is seven different sterling crosses overlaid on top of each other. So sterling Aussie, sterling Swiss, euro sterling yen, etc., etc., etc. The only one that I don't combine myself, or the only two actually, is the yen basket, which is already done for you. And DXY, which is obviously the dollar basket, so which obviously is a weighted basket. So what I'm looking for a news driver, which we've already talked about, but then I'm also looking for a chart formation that tells me that I should be selling sterling. So I've got my sterling New Zealand sell signal. I now want a chart formation that tells me that I should be selling sterling. And I also want a chart formation that tells me I should be buying New Zealand. So if we go and look at this chart, this is the weekly chart for the sterling basket. We had a decent sell-off when the UK went into a technical recession, and we've seen this quite aggressive move back to the upside. Now, this area here, which is near the previous swing high, that's a prime short entry for the CD leg in this single currency basket. And I like it because it's telling me that the risk is limited. Because it's near the previous swing high, I know that if it breaks that swing high, then this pattern is null and void. It's gone, it's disappeared. So, really, to short sterling here, you've got that as your potential return, which is just for the people that can't see the screen. So in this single currency basket, you're looking at, a decent percentage. I don't believe that's a true percentage of sterling,
It's a
but
big move, though. I can see
yeah.
that.
And then, so if we put let's put a risk reward calculator on there. So basically, you'll be looking at a risk reward of maybe 8 AR maybe 9R. Okay, so you're trying to sell at the top of what I believe is a potential trend. Then if I go to New Zealand, obviously if I'm selling sterling, I want to be buying New Zealand. And I go to New Zealand and I need a chart to tell me that I could go in the opposite direction. So this is the daily chart on New Zealand. This is what's known as what I call a projected support level, because this area here will make a bat formation. So I'm looking for a move to the upside in this BC leg. So I'm basically looking for sterling to go lower after completing the BC leg, and I'm looking for New Zealand to move higher within the BC leg. So
Okay.
I've got that correlation. I've got one moving in one direction, I've got one moving in the other direction. And these levels, what you'll find is these levels will line up. So it won't be exact, but if you go and look at other sterling crosses, predominantly at the other seven sterling crosses that you've got that you're looking at, most of them should be telling you to sell sterling. So the sterling New Zealand setup, we've also got a sterling Swiss sell setup. Like I said, there was two trades that I've been focusing on with regards to selling sterling. But then sterling dollar is in a downward path at the moment, downward trajectory. I think we're moving lower in an Elliott wave count. I know I said I wasn't fanatical about it, but I still look at it. And the other sterling crosses all look like there's scope for sterling to move lower. Okay, they're not signals, but they've all got scope for to move lower. So it's basically using correlation. It's using single currency baskets to highlight a strong and a weak currency. And then it's using chart formations to basically turn around and say, yeah, you could be having a top here, and that offers a decent trading opportunity. And if we go back to this sterling New Zealand just very quickly,
Yes.
so you know the topping formation or the completion of the pattern is at 210.70. We've made a 210.66 swing high at the moment. I'm not saying it's not going to get there. But then again, going back to sterling New Zealand, you've got to have a target level. So the 8 hour chart highlights that I will complete a pattern going in the other direction at 204.60 ish. So it gives me an entry. And as I was saying before, a lot of retail traders don't realize the importance of having a defined entry, a defined stop, and a defined target. So this will give me a defined target. It's given me a defined entry, and then I can work out my risk. And you know, I was saying to you before, you know, sometimes I'll get a decent sort of bleeder, what I like to call a bleeder, which where you know the news drives this cross aggressively. And I can manage it quite quickly. So I can get in at what I think is a prime level. I can get a stop loss to entry because basically, if that isn't the high, then all these patterns just fall out of bed, if you like. And that enables me to get quite a decent risk reward setup. And you can see on here, you know, if I had a stop loss of 70 odd ticks, it's nearly 8.5 R. So I don't need very many of these to fall into place to make money. The only issue that I have, the only issue that a lot of sort of traders on the Discord channel talk about is obviously the rolling costs. I'm not in and out of trades, as we said earlier. You know, I'm swing trading, so sometimes the rolling costs can be quite expensive.
That's the funding cost, right? The difference between the different currency pairs, because obviously you're pairing off one country's interest rates against another, and
Occasionally you get paid, but it never seems to be in my favor. Strangely enough.
All right. Okay. So that's interesting. Just on that chart, I mean, last thing before we leave the screen, what would trigger the entry here? Because you've identified in what I would call, I suppose, an area of interest where you're going to be looking to
The
potentially put this trade on. But what has to happen for the trade to actually be initiated?
I don't wait for a reversal candle formation. I used to look at what I used to call outside bars, and I used to use DMARC indicators to highlight a flip. So there's a four candle reversal formation in DMARC, and if I got one of these reversal candles and then I got a one count, I would use that as my initiation candle and I'd place my stop loss above it. The reason that I sort of fell out of love with that to a certain extent was because, I might have to wait for a 6 hour candle to produce a sell signal, and by that point, using this sort of currency cross as an example, that could be 50 points lower. My stop loss, original stop loss, if I'd just hit the trigger, might have only been 30, 40 points. So I'm suddenly massively extending my stop loss because my entry is so much bigger. So what I have a tendency to do is I still look at DMARC indicators, and I look for a 13 count, which is an exhaustion count. I look at it hopefully in a higher time frame. So when I say a higher time frame, I'm not looking down into what I call micro charts. I'm not interested in 1 minute and 2 minute and 5 minute charts. What I'd like to see is a 13 count, maybe on an hourly chart, 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour, 8 hour daily. And then I calculate my stop loss from there. So the completion of the pattern, which in this case is 210.70, is the entry. I'll then look at a DMARC 13 to calculate a stop. And those that don't know how to calculate a stop from a DMARC 13, you basically look at the length of the candle that has produced the 13 count. You then add the length of that candle, if it's a sell trade, on top of your trigger candle, and that's your defined stop loss.
All right.
So again, if that candle is quite small, then your defined stop can be quite small. You shouldn't run away from that, because that defined stop being quite small will result in a bigger R rate, basically.
All right, super. All right, brilliant. And well, let's stop the screen share there
Sure.
and then carry on. I mean, we are getting towards the end of our allotted time anyway, but I've just got one or two more things I'd like to quickly ask you. I mean, in terms of a daily routine, do you have a specific routine that you follow as a trader getting set up for the market for the day ahead?
I don't trade opens and the open and close. I because I swing trade and I scan the markets quite regularly, out of boredom probably about six times a day, which I could probably do twice a day and still find my setups. But I start work quite early. My alarm goes off about 5:30. I normally wake up before that, about half past. Sorry, my alarm goes off at 10 to 6. I normally get up about 5:30 before the alarm. I'm sat in front of screens by 10 to 6, scanning the markets. I write some reports for Signal Center for the first sort of 30, 40 minutes of my day, which gets me focused on what's moving, what the news is. I have just two screens. I haven't got multiple screens everywhere, but just two screens. And one of my first jobs in the morning is to look at the news feeds that I follow. So I have News Squawk on there, Reuters, obviously FX Street news feed. I have an oil platform on there that tells me what's moving commodities. I'll scan that to see if there's any breaking news stories that I should be aware of. I then will look at the calendar. What I normally do on the single currency baskets, as you could see previously, I will note when there's data releases coming out. So, on DXY, I've got a big horizontal line at this evening's release. Say, Fed interest rate decision. Yesterday it was BOJ. So I know when these reports are due out, but on a Sunday or a Monday morning, that'll be one of my tasks, just to highlight all the different important data releases, Fed speakers, etc. And then at 7 o'clock, or about 6:45, I start getting ready for the day with the FX Street Discord channel.
Okay.
So that is, again, writing reports on what we call the seven major products. And then I have a tendency, because it's sort of my background, to write a report, but then have an intraday setup on it. So, you know, with a good focus on single currency baskets, but also with a good focus on risk reward.
Yeah.
So if I can't see an intraday setup, then I won't post it. But, you know, this morning was selling euro dollar on a rally, focusing on a certain level, you know, a 3-to-1 sort of risk reward setup.
Mm.
By about quarter past seven or half past seven, we've done those reports, and then it's a case of just working through the day. We've got a lot of traders in the Discord channel that are looking at a variety of different products, including single stocks. You know, we will write analytical reports,
okay,
on the single stocks, not too much on the fundamental side.
Right.
My colleagues are, some are technically focused, some are more fundamental. So it's quite a good combination of traders. You know, a lot of the people within the Discord channel will say, "What's sterling Swiss?" And I'll give an analytical view, and they go, "Can somebody write me a fundamental report on that? What's driving sterling? What's driving Swiss?" So you get a combination of everything.
Okay.
I finish work at about 3:30, because I start quite early. I have an afternoon off every once a week where I play golf.
Okay, nice.
I have a slightly addictive personality, so I have to sit in front of these charts and get focused. But I'm also pretty obsessed with golf. I think it's a bit like trading. You know, if you're not on your game, you can have a bad round.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can see the shots and you know where it's going to go, and you can read the putts and stuff like that. Sometimes you stand over the ball and you just haven't got a clue. So,
yeah. No, there's lots of parallels, between various sports. Also, think like in golf, it's, you know, it's about stringing your good shots together, and in trading as well, you know. Anyone can hit a good golf shot once, but can you do it, you know, 60 times in a row?
Well, that's where I struggle.
Me too. And trading likewise, you know, can you have 60 good trades in a row? It doesn't mean they're all winners, but are they good trades?
Yeah.
So, you know, consistency. Yeah.
There's a story there, but I'm not going to bore you with that one.
All right, Ian. And last thing before we wrap it up, any books? You did say that you're quite a prolific reader. If you were to name like one or two books that you think a potential Forex trader should absolutely read, what are they?
I've always got books on my desk. I've recently moved house, so there's quite a lot still in storage, but I've got a notebook. I know everybody gets told to keep a diary. I do write in it every day.
Yeah.
I print off every report that I take. It'll be the sort of, you know, the base currency cross with the single currencies, and my reason behind it makes that ensures that I'm not going off track, that I'm sticking to my system. And then this is a book that I've recently read. Did you see Steve?
I did. I don't have it on my desk, because it's actually next to my bed. That's where it is.
Yeah.
But it's Stephen Goldstein's book, Mastering the Mental Game of Trading. So likewise, I'm reading it at the moment, and I actually had Stephen on the podcast about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So great
he's
guy.
A great guy. He used to work at Credit Suisse when I was broken. So so it was sort of a name from the past, if you like.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the other one I'm reading is, at the moment, is this one, the Wyckoff.
Wyckoff. Okay.
I have a tendency to read everything and maybe throw away 95%, apart from the psychology side that I really do take to heart.
Yeah.
But I find that this system might work, but will it work for me?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know. There's a lot of focus at the moment on smart money concept. You know, our institution, I know you're going to ask me about institutional establishments earlier on, and, you know, being involved in the foreign exchange market, you know, and there seems to be a lot of not conspiracy theories, but there's a lot of theories that, you know, these guys gang up and go and hunt stop losses and stuff like that. In my experience from sort of back in the day, I don't think it happened. Whether or not that's changed. I find some of the concept interesting. I find the break of highs and lows quite interesting and potential liquidity grabs. But it doesn't really fit into my format, if you like.
All right. Super. All right, Ian, well, we've run out of time, so I'm going to wrap it up here. But thank you very much for making yourself
My pleasure.
available for this interview. It's been great chatting to you and getting a bit of insight into the forex market and into the way you trade and how you see things. It is quite different, I must say, to the way we look at equity markets and analyze stocks. So pretty interesting. But thank you again for your time. I appreciate it, and hopefully we meet up again at some stage soon.
That's great. Thanks, Garth.
Right.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to this series by clicking on the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd also appreciate if you'd leave a review on the app too. Till next time.